You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, May the 23rd. Well, there are at least 10 Republican candidates who are running for president in 2008, and maybe more on the way. As they look toward the future, they're also reaching back to the past. Ronald Reagan's name was used by the candidates 19 times at their debate earlier this month, held at Ronald Reagan's Presidential Library in California. President Bush's name was brought up once. But is Ronald Reagan's legacy all it's cracked up to be? Our guest this hour says, all the posturing in Reagan's name is comical and demeaning, but not without danger. You can join in our conversation. We wonder, do you think Ronald Reagan was a great president for these GOP candidates to emulate or not? Why or why not? Are the candidates being smart or making a mistake, invoking his name so much? Our number, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. You can also send us an email, talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Joe Connison. He is a writer for Salon.com and the New York Observer. He's also an investigative editor for the Nation Institute, author of the book, It Can Happen Here, Authoritarian Peril in the Age of Bush. And he also wrote a recent essay, GOP Tall Tales About Reagan. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
We had a recent open line where listeners tell us who they'd like us to talk to, and your name came up. Someone wanted us to talk to you, which I'm happy to do. They wanted us to talk about your new book, but we did that in February.
That's true, we did.
Yeah, so happy to have you back to talk about this issue. Now, the reason these GOP candidates are bringing up Ronald Reagan's name in the debate and on the campaign trail is because they don't want to be hurt by bringing up President George W. Bush's name, isn't that right?
Well, I'm sure that's part of it. I mean, it's worth noting that when they all did that, they were speaking at the Reagan Library, which is kind of a hallowed ground for people in the conservative movement. There's a training institute there for young conservatives, and of course, for Republicans, you know, Reagan is the symbol of the good old days. I mean, he was kind of he was president at the height of the conservative ascendancy in America. He was also a likable person. He presided over the end of the Cold War, and so there are plenty of good reasons for Republicans to try to associate themselves with Ronald Reagan. The problem that I had with what the Republican candidates did the other night at the Reagan Library was that they tried to suggest that Reagan was some kind of leader who had intimidated the world in America's name, who had Rudy Giuliani, kind of the boiling point of the debate, said if the way that we should confront Iran would be to sort of stare at them as if we were Ronald Reagan. He said, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who's the president of Iran, has to look at an American president and has to see Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, remember, they looked in Reagan's eyes, and in 2 minutes they released the hostages. Well, that is
that's just a
ridiculous rewriting of what happened historically, and it's also a kind of a strange way to look at Reagan, because he was confrontational in some ways, but in the end, that's not the legacy of his presidency, and it's not what ultimately made his presidency great, if it was great.
The hostages, though, were, what, practically released during his inauguration or something? I mean, I can't remember exactly.
And there was a lot of suspicion, and people can decide for themselves whether it was well-founded or not, but a lot of evidence was compiled, notably by a former government official named Gary Sick, that the Reagan campaign had been in touch with the Iranians to convince them that if they held the hostages until after the election, they would get a better deal from the U.S. government if the new U.S. government was headed by Ronald Reagan. Even if that didn't happen, those suspicions were greatly aroused by the fact that within a year or two after Reagan took office, the U.S. government was not confronting Iran, which by then had been identified as a sponsor of terrorism and a kind of enemy of the United States, but they were secretly negotiating with Iran and, in fact, secretly giving Iran missiles, high-tech weaponry, in exchange for Iran's effort to get some other hostages released in the Middle East by a group called the Dawa Party in Lebanon, which had captured several Americans and was torturing them. And as the president himself later said, he didn't want to believe that he was trading arms for hostages, but mm-hmm. but that's exactly what he ordered his officials to do. So I just, you know, when something like that happens, I always think, Joy, you know, we forget so much of our own history, even things that happened, you know, 20 years ago. And that's an extremely unhealthy thing. And that the Republican candidates, it seems to me, were manipulating people's forgetfulness and ignorance of what had really happened here.
We're talking with Joe Connison, writer for Salon.com and the New York Observer, talking about a recent essay he wrote, GOP Tall Tales About Ronald Reagan. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 17 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, May the 23rd. This afternoon, at issue with Ben Marins. After 5 o'clock, Ben talks with the author of Can You Say a Few Words? About what makes a great speech? Ben and his guest talking about speech making because it 'tis the season for commencement speeches. Graduation all over the place, and that's the topic after 5 o'clock. We're talking about Ronald Reagan's legacy and how the GOP candidates for president are trying to emulate Ronald Reagan quite a bit in debates and on the campaign trail. Talking with a guest who says that it's kind of comical, actually. He says that Reagan's legacy as a great president is really a myth. He wrote an essay, GOP Tall Tales About Reagan. He is Joe Connison, a writer for Salon.com and the New York Observer, also an investigative editor for the Nation Institute and author of It Can Happen Here, Authoritarian Peril in the Age of Bush. And we welcome your thoughts and questions for him. What do you think? Do you think that the candidates are being smart or making a mistake in invoking Ronald Reagan's name so much? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Keith in Shorewood is with us first. Hi, Keith. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning, Jory.
Good morning.
Joe, I miss hearing you and Al Franken on Friday afternoons with Wait, Don't Lie to Me. It was one of my favorite times of the week.
I miss doing that a lot, although I'm not sure we should talk about the competing network.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
on NPR.
Al Franken's running for something now.
In a neighboring state, he's running for something. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, I know, and he's tapping us over here pretty hard, too. So.
I bet he is.
Yeah. You know, it's not dumb, of course, for the Republican candidates to mention Ronald Reagan because he's been so well packaged. But I also thought what was dumb was 3 years ago, I guess it was, when Ronald Reagan passed away and people were lined up for up to 10 hours to pass by his coffin in D.C. in that extremely hot, miserable weather. The reason why I'm saying that is that Ronald Reagan was definitely not a friend of the middle class. The things that he did in terms of union busting and in terms of his tax cuts, I mean, the problem is that the Republican Party still thinks that this sort of thing is a great idea. But when you look at the past 25 years, all the gains that were made by the middle class following World War II and running through the 70s just absolutely ground to a halt. And this is definitely, that's my big bone that I have to pick with the Reagan administration.
Joe Connison?
Well, you know, I can't really argue with any of that. I think that Reagan was somebody who, you know, as we know, if you look at his biography, is somebody who grew up quite poor, had to rely on government assistance. His family did when he was young, and became a liberal as a young man, and then during the New Deal, and a supporter of the Democratic Party. And then when he became a wealthy employee of General Electric, decided that he was a Republican, and started giving speeches for Republicans. And if that oversimplifies it, perhaps it does. He also had experiences with communism in Hollywood that I think had a deep effect on his political views. But certainly by the time he became president, he represented an extreme turn away from the kinds of policies that had helped build the American middle class. And the union busting was stunning, since this was somebody who had himself come up through the labor movement as an actor.
Yeah. Anything else, Keith?
It's interesting, Joe. I think in a way that sort of reflected the change that a lot of Americans went through. I mean, when you look at the factors going into the 70s with the Vietnam War, with the shocks from the oil crisis, and the fact that then foreign cars started pouring into this country, and the disaffection that traditional Democrats had, partially due to, I think, school busing, forced busing, was sort of emblematic of it. But the problem is, somehow or other, we have to get off of this. And unfortunately, a lot of Democrats, centrist Democrats, have bought into what Reagan has sold as well.
Well, I think, frankly, I think they're starting to get over that. I wouldn't say that's wrong, but I think that's diminishing now, and that you've seen a new crop of more progressive Democrats come into the Congress in the past, certainly in the past midterm election. And I don't think you're going to hear a lot of Reagan-style rhetoric, at least from the Democratic side, in this presidential race. I think people who are running for president now understand that that American voters want to hear something new, and they want to hear how candidates propose to address very, very serious problems that the country faces that Ronald Reagan, I think, never thought about, such as obviously global warming, the climate change crisis, our energy problems, the question of providing health care at an affordable cost to everyone. These are the main issues that I think, and our place in the world, for that matter. These are issues that I think didn't confront Reagan in the same way during the last years of the Cold War that they do now for the next president.
We'll go next to Richard in Menominee Falls. Hi, Richard.
Good morning, Joe. Joe, it's always wonderful to talk to you, and I echo the last caller's sentiments about missing your show on Fridays.
Better not keep saying that. They're going to take me off the air.
Well, maybe we'll have you on every Friday or something, Joe.
There's an idea.
I think that's a great idea, Joe. I think that'd be a wonderful thing. Joe, I guess as I watched those Republican debates, I think the thing that probably turned my stomach the most was the continued references to Ronald Reagan and the kissing up to Ronald Reagan, and I just don't understand. But one issue that if you could explain this as quickly as possible, because I never quite understood, how did the whole Ali North thing work with him? I mean, didn't he admit later that that was a mistake, the whole Iran-Contra business and that kind of thing? What was it? I've heard it said that he should have been impeached, but that the Democrats didn't want to go through the re-impeach process with him for that. So could you give me the Cliff Notes version of what that was all about?
Yes. The Cliff Notes version is that Ali North and Ronald Reagan don't agree about what happened. Oliver North, the Marine Lieutenant Colonel, who turned out to secretly be working for the Central Intelligence Agency in the White House, and who was kind of the author of the Iran-Contra exchange, where they took the money that they had earned illicitly, and I would say illegally, from selling missiles to Iran, and used it to finance the Contra rebels in Nicaragua, who were then revolting against the Marxist government there. Lieutenant Colonel North testified that he had gotten absolute permission from the President of the United States to do all of these things. Through the National Security Advisor, John Poindexter, who was brought back, by the way, in this administration to oversee something called the Total Information Awareness Program. I'm sure some listeners at least will remember that strange episode. But President Reagan testified and has tried to say in his in his diaries that he did not authorize North to do these things, and that a lot of this came as a surprise to him. And he stuck to that story. And the, I guess the question that a lot of people had was, would President Reagan at that point in the presidency have even remembered necessarily everything that happened? Because, as, of course, as it turned out, he suffered from Alzheimer's, and he may have even had some type of dementia while he was still in the White House. Remember, there were stories about him falling asleep at cabinet meetings. And, you know, and this is an issue that kind of brings, it almost creates a sense of feeling sorry for him, that this was a man who had been incredibly vigorous in his youth and a leader of real capacity, whether you disagreed with him or not, who was deteriorating while he was still president, and that may have caused some of these problems at least. There's no question, however, that he appointed a bunch of very unscrupulous people to high positions who did these things and broke the law and really violated principles that are pretty significant, one of which is not to conduct the foreign policy in secret.
Thank you, Richard. Peggy in Madison is next. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'd just like to wonder if you had heard this discrepancy between a famous quote that Reagan is known for, and that is trust but verify. And as I understand it, it was the Russian person at the Cuban Missile Crisis that when they were talking about these two sides of the question, that he quoted a Russian proverb, trust but verify.
Well, it wasn't the Cuban Missile Crisis. It was because that was under President Kennedy. The time when Reagan said trust but verify, and he said it in Russian, and I have to say he did this with great style, was during his discussions at Reykjavik with the Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev. Yes.
Which was,
by the way, a great moment for Ronald Reagan. And if he was to be known as a great president, it was because of that.
Yes, and that was an irony, I thought, because as I understood it, I know that Khrushchev had, or somebody like that had said it, but I knew it was in the Cuban missile and that Kennedy was president, but I also remembered that Reagan had picked it up.
So you're saying, yeah, that Ronald Reagan lifted it from that. Do you know about that, Joe Connison?
I don't remember that saying coming up during the Cuban Missile Crisis or anything quite that friendly happening.
Yeah.
I mean, we're on the verge of thermonuclear war at that point, and I don't know what the telephone conversations were like, but Reagan said that face to face with Gorbachev in Reykjavik, and the upshot of that, by the way, of course, was that the conservatives, and especially the neoconservatives, who were for a very aggressive sort of gunslinging attitude in the world, were extremely disappointed with Reagan for going to Reykjavik, for expressing any trust in Gorbachev, and for ultimately reaching an agreement with the Soviets. They all said that he had lost his marbles when he did that. And, of course, it was probably the best thing he ever did.
We're going to jump in and check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking with Joe Connison. He's a writer and author, and we're talking about Ronald Reagan's legacy and how the current crop of GOP presidential candidates keep bringing his name up.
They looked in Ronald Reagan's eyes the same course that Ronald Reagan,
alternate delegate for Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan used to say,
big ideas like Ronald Reagan.
And you just heard a montage of some of the Republican presidential candidates at their May 3rd debate, invoking the name of Ronald Reagan numerous times, about 19 times, according to my producer's count. We're talking about why the Republican candidates who are running for president in 2008 are trying to emulate Ronald Reagan, or at least bring up the Ronald Reagan legacy more often than not. Are these candidates doing the right thing or making a mistake by invoking his name so much? Do you think that Ronald Reagan was a great president to emulate? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Joe Connison, who is a writer for Salon.com and the New York Observer, also an investigative editor for the Nation Institute, author of the book It Can Happen Here, Authoritarian Peril in the Age of Bush. And he wrote a recent essay GOP Tall Tales about Ronald Reagan, in which he talks about especially Rudy Giuliani in that debate, talking about how the Iran hostage takers just had to look into Ronald Reagan's eyes, and in 2 minutes they released the hostages. Joe Connison says that's really, really a myth. He wrote, the tough gunslinger described by the Republican candidates resembles the real Reagan about as accurately as his movie roles resembled his real life. We welcome your thoughts and questions for Joe Connison. And by the way, we did do a check through the news, Joe, that on the trust but verify quote, and our producers say that looks like trust but verify is Reagan's. It was a Russian quote, but also translated as better safe than sorry. That's the confusion, producers, is did he lift this from a Russian quote? But anyway, trust
well,
but
the Russian quote rhymes. It's dovoryoy na provoryoy, I believe, or allowing for my terrible pronunciation.
Yeah.
There are two words that rhyme, and I think he himself translated it as trust but verify.
I do.
I.e., you know, you trust your mother, but you cut the cards, which was a friendly way of saying to Gorbachev that we want a different relationship with you than we've had in the past, but we're still going to protect our interests.
Yeah. Back to the phones we go. Richard in Mount Zion. Hi, you're on the air.
Well, this is Chris, but that's okay, Joy.
I guess our producer misunderstood your name, but
that's fine.
Chris.
That's fine. We can see why the Republicans don't believe in evolution, because they're devolving when they bring up Reagan. And the points I wanted to make up or bring up is the idea that that Reagan helped this country. I think people really need to be clear on that. Reagan did no favor to the working people of this country with all of his wars. His wars, his Star Wars, his drug wars, and let me focus on drug war. The drug war that Nancy Reagan and Mr. Reagan brought to the fore, three strikes, you're out, mandatory minimums, and so forth, have resulted where today we take 860,000 people off the streets arrested for small amounts of marijuana. And then you can throw in all the other stuff, too. Billions and billions of your taxpayer dollars are used to incarcerate, build prisons for people who are working-class citizens who do nothing other than maybe smoke a joint. And that's what Reagan has brought us. And then we can start talking about Star Wars. And I wish Joe would talk about both these issues, because I think these are the things that have bankrupted this nation. And look where we are today. We have no money for health care. We have no money for education. And it's because of these Reagan and Bush-type wars. And thank you. And Joe, please comment on these.
Yeah, I'd be happy to comment on that. I've written quite a lot about the drug war over the years. A terrible misuse of resources, particularly in prosecuting users of marijuana, obviously. But in fact, it's the wrong-headed approach to what is essentially a medical problem. And the problem with the caller's remarks, I would say, is that Democrats are as implicated as heavily in the drug war as Republicans. There are very, very few Democrats who have been willing to stand up and say, this is not the right approach to dealing with drug abuse, and we're wasting resources and we're ruining people's lives, and this is just not the way to do things. The Democrats have been better in their critique of what the caller called Star Wars, a missile defense system, although they wasted quite a bit of money on that when Clinton was president, too, just not as much as the Republicans. And I guess by now people understand that missile defense, although it may work in some small applications, is sort of characterized by the tests that they conduct where they they have to rig the test in advance for it to work. That is to say, they have to make sure that the missile that we use to shoot down the incoming attacking missile knows exactly where that, when, what time, when, and where that attacking missile is going to come down in order to have any hope of shooting it down, and even then it usually doesn't work. And we have spent tens and tens of billions of dollars on that. So I'm in agreement with the caller. I think it's true that that Reagan heavily promoted both of those misguided policies and a lot of other ones too. I mean, lest I be seen as some kind of defender of Ronald Reagan's legacy, I wrote a pretty scathing assessment of him and what he had done not too long after he passed away. I think if you want to look at his effects in the present, you have to consider what he said when he was inaugurated, which is that government is not the solution to our problems. Government is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
This is the approach overall that has led to the complete, basically the collapse of the federal government under George W. Bush, who was another politician who told us that he was going to be like Reagan, and he proved that he was. The incompetence and corruption in this government really echoes what we saw under Reagan when, by the time he left office, 138 officials had been convicted, indicted, or the subject of investigations for misconduct over the 8 years that he was in office. And we had Justice Department scandals, we had EPA scandals, we had an enormous scandal in the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and of course, huge, huge scandals in the Pentagon that are not so different from what we're seeing with Halliburton Corporation now.
Yeah. Ronald Reagan getting a lot of glowing press, being called the great communicator once again because of the release of his diaries, the just released diaries, where he has handwritten notes about every major event, but a whole bunch about Nancy, apparently.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say that I've gotten to like Mrs. Reagan a lot more lately. And I also think that at least their two younger children have turned out reasonably well. And there is no question that Reagan was a very, very talented political leader. For the people who agreed with him, it's totally understandable that they look up to him. The problem comes when you start to assess the effects of his record and things that he did that we still live with today. And I think in the end, history will not be that kind to him.
Shirley in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. A very perceptive writer recently said about another American politician in writing a critique of his book that the American political system has become the rigged game that suppresses honesty and rewards deception. That would be you.
I recognize that. I hope.
Yes, I got it from Frumkin's column yesterday. And I wondered how much you think that Ronald Reagan contributed to this, because before him, my perception is the country was reeling still from Watergate during the time of Ford and Carter. And my perception is that it really consolidated this game aspect during the time of Reagan. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
You know, say that, what that great writer wrote again, Joe Connison?
That she was quoting from a review that was published yesterday in the Los Angeles Times that I wrote of Al Gore's new book, which is called The Assault on Reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to look up the quote, but basically...
It was a good one, though.
It said that... What I started out to talk about in that review was why it is that Al Gore suddenly believes that he can tell the truth. And I say, as he explains in his new book, American democracy has degenerated into a rigged game that suppresses honesty and rewards deception.
Mm.
And, I have to say, I think anybody who reads Gore's book, which is a very interesting book, we'll see that he blames television, actually, for a lot of this. He makes a very clear distinction between the period when print media and to a degree radio, although he says that radio is actually the beginning of the problem because it was he regards radio as often a one-way means of communication.
He doesn't
really
listen to Wisconsin.
We're doing on this show, right?
Yeah.
But he says when we relied more heavily on printed means of communication that were more open and gave people more opportunities to express themselves, our ideas were challenged and we were more susceptible to reason. At least that's his view. And that television is kind of a hypnotic, one-way medium where people with a lot of money can buy advertising and kind of overwhelm reasoned debate.
I hate to do this, but we're at a weather break that I have to take or I get yelled at. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, 12 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, May the 23rd. Sure like the sound of that weather forecast for today anyway. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up after 8 o'clock, I'll talk with a guest about the latest version of the Iraq funding bill and whether or not it means the Democrats caved on this one. The bill does not contain a timeline for troop withdrawal. Right now, we're talking with Joe Connison. He's a writer for Salon.com, the New York Observer. He's the author of It Can Happen Here, Authoritarian Peril in the Age of Bush. We're talking with him about an essay he wrote about the Republican presidential candidates invoking the name of Ronald Reagan, the piece called GOP Tall Tales About Reagan. And before we had to check that important weather forecast, Joe, you were telling us about Al Gore's book and how he says that the system is rigged to suppress honesty and reward deception. And can you kind of link that up to Ronald Reagan? Did he participate in this?
Well, I think, like all modern politicians, Reagan had to deal with a system that was largely television-based. And, of course, as a former television actor and TV host, he was very well equipped to do that. I mean, I think that was one of the reasons that the people at General Electric chose him as a spokesman in the late 50s. They saw the age of television coming, and he was a great master of it. Mm-hmm. And, yes, I think it's clear that Reagan had a tremendous capacity to... not to put too fine a point on it, but to use television to deceive people about the real intent of what he was doing and the real effects. And but I don't think you can say that Reagan was the cause of this. He was more like one of the effects.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go off focus for a minute. Since I'm talking about the Iraq funding bill out of Congress, the one that doesn't include the timetable, what do you think of that?
Well, I think it was kind of inevitable, but a shame. And I think what should happen is that the opponents of the war are going to have to find other ways to put everyone on the record over and over again as we approach next year's election. I mean, one of the critiques of the Democratic attempts to put a timeline was that this was political and that it was bad to make a political statement about what the president has done. But, of course, that's the only thing that you can do if you're in Congress. You are there to conduct yourself as a political official. And if you're there to try to give people a choice about matters of important policy. So I hope that they will continue to be political about the war because great majorities of people are expressing their dismay over the president's policy and his refusal to change it. So we'll see what happens after now. But I think that ultimately we're going to have many more votes on these issues, as Senator Byrd, the majority leader of the Democrats, said.
George in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, George.
Yeah, good morning. One of the things that I would like to see the Republicans emulate Reagan in is how Reagan decided to pull out of Lebanon after the something like 280 Marines and soldiers were killed there in the barracks attack in 1982. I think that Reagan understood that Lebanon was a quagmire he was not willing to invest any more American lives in losing there with no end in sight. And I think if the Republicans want to follow Reagan's example, they might think about leaving Iraq post-haste.
Yeah, you bring this up in your piece, Joe Connison.
Well, yes. Mm-hmm. There were 241 Marines tragically killed in Lebanon. And, in fact, that was one of the reasons that the Reaganites ended up negotiating in secret with Iran. It was because they'd had to flee Lebanon in kind of humiliation and wanted to figure out how to deal with the terrorist parties there, which included the Dawa Party, which was a Shia terrorist and political organization. But, of course, you wouldn't wish for the second part of what happened when Reagan pulled us out of Lebanon, which was that they immediately decided that they had to attack another country, which was Grenada. And in fact, they did that in the most cynical way. Irving Kristol, who was one of the leaders of the neoconservative movement, used to laugh about what a joke it was that there was any need for us to attack Grenada and overthrow the little government there. But it had what politicians call the rally effect. It immediately took people's minds off what had happened in Lebanon and made America seem great again for overthrowing one of the smallest countries in the world. I mean, it barely had an army at all, no navy, no air force, and yet that worked. That was a clever, and I would say, going back to what we were discussing a minute ago, a sort of a television event that really deceived people about what was going on in the government.
Thank you, George. Al in La Crosse. Hi, you're on the air.
A previous caller mentioned that Ronald Reagan's involvement in Iran-Contra, but a far more significant atrocity occurred in Guatemala and El Salvador, where under Ronald Reagan, the CIA was authorized to train the Guatemalan and Honduran counterinsurgency forces in search and destroy missions and obliteration of entire villages, especially in Guatemala, which were populated by Mayan Indians. The Historical Truth Commission, which was sponsored by the United Nations after the war, concluded that the CIA was responsible for training Guatemalan military units which engaged in the systematic genocide of over 200,000 Mayan Indians.
We armed them, too.
Pardon me?
I said we armed those military forces as well.
And we also covered up the fact,
Guatemala.
And we also covered up the fact that this was going on to the American public. Reagan set up a public perception program with Walter Raymond Jr., former CIA agent who was the public relations director for the Central American cover-up, who was appointed to the National Security Council to make sure the American public didn't understand what was being done in our name.
You know, that's absolutely correct. And in any catalog of the crimes of the Reagan administration, certainly the Central America policy would have to be at the top. Question is whether President Reagan really understood, again, what was being done in the name of the United States there, whether somebody convinced him that those hundreds of thousands of Guatemalan Indians who had been murdered down there were communists, and that was the excuse for all of this. Of course, what they were was landless peasants who were trying to get a better deal for themselves from the oligarchs who ruled that region, and the same was true in El Salvador for the most part. And this alleged communism became the excuse for horrible, horrible atrocities. But the caller's absolutely right. There was certainly a conspiracy to cover this up, to put forward a very different picture of it. And again, some of the people who are responsible for that policy have resurfaced in the Bush 2 administration, notably Elliot Abrams, who lied to Congress about what we were doing in Central America and still seems to be a figure of great respect in the Republican Party.
And our last caller, Corey in Milwaukee. Hi, Corey.
Hey, Joy. Hey, Joe. How are you doing?
Good. I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you for an excellent topic. I was in college and started voting for the first time when Ronald Reagan was in office, and I just remember just thinking always when he was on television that I never could believe he actually was our president. It always seemed like he was an actor playing president on the television. I just never took him seriously. Is Arnold Schwarzenegger going to, you know, be the next Ronald Reagan? I don't know. You know, an actor becoming president. I shudder to think. But
well, maybe Fred Thompson.
Maybe. But my comment was that Ronald Reagan was tear down that wall, Mr. Gorbachev, and from that whole event, for me, Gorbachev walked away as really the star of that whole event. Can you comment on that and what really happened? And did Ronald Reagan just at the right place at the right time?
Oh, you know what? We have less than a minute, so it'll have to be a real quick...
Well, I'll give you a very quick answer to that. Gorbachev was undoubtedly a great and tragic figure, and Reagan's great moment was when he decided that he would have to trust that Gorbachev really meant it about trying to change the Soviet Union and change the world. And we owe him something for that, in spite of all the flaws that we've been talking about this morning.
Well, we'll certainly have you on more, back more often if you have time for us, Joe Connison. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Anytime, Joy. Thank you.
Joe Connison, writer for Salon.com and the New York Observer, investigative editor for the Nation Institute, author of It Can Happen Here, Authoritarian Peril in the Age of Bush. We were talking with him today about his recent essay about GOP presidential candidates telling tall tales about Ronald Reagan. And he was also requested by a listener in a recent open line to have on as a guest, so we're happy to comply with that, too. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing the hour and to Christy Taylor and Karen Prager for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.